We're broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios. Visit MTE.com. MTE.com. Middle Tennessee Electric. Serving to make life better since 1936.
Since 1936.
Talking with Rutherford County for 78 years.
This is the WGNS Action Line.
Now, your host, Scott Walker.
This morning, we'll be talking about the Doors of Hope, what the Doors of Hope does each and every day, and how folks go about participating. We have Marcy Richmond with us today, and then also Lois Barrett Luke. How are both of y'all doing today?
Great.
Hey, Lois, you are the executive director at Doors of Hope. Tell us what your daily walk is.
I'm involved in nearly every aspect of running the agency, but my main job is to make sure my team has the resources to do their job, which is to support women in recovery and reentry. So I could do anything from finance. I could talk with a client. I could do something with HR. I could do something with a provider, a contractor, budget stuff.
Doors of Hope, the programs that go on there for women who were recently incarcerated, is it a 12-month program?
That's right. It lasts 12 months. We have an initial phase that's about 30 to 45 days in our recovery center where they really begin their recovery journeys. And then after that, we have a phased program where they're freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, as they work their way up and earn more privileges and work their 12-step program.
And Marcy, tell us a little bit about your role with Doors of Hope.
Well, Doors of Hope was incorporated in 2011 by our founder, Maridelle Williams, and that coincided with my retirement. So it was not terribly long after that that I got involved as a volunteer, and I've been a volunteer on and off, mostly on, ever since that time. I serve as secretary of the board of directors currently, and I've had a couple of terms on the board previously where I served as chairman for a bit of that.
It sounds like work that would be enjoyable because you're changing lives.
It changes and saves lives. It restores families. It's incredible to watch the growth of these women as they are given the tools that they've probably never had to lead a successful life.
And a lot of these women who go through the program, they've got kids, they've got a family.
Yes, they do. And in most cases, they've lost custody. They have to work their way back into their children's lives. It may be a mother caring for the kids. It may be the foster system. There are any number of possibilities. We do not provide housing for the children, but we do everything in our power to help them get to that point where they can get back with their families.
Highlight some of the life changes you've seen. Maybe you've witnessed firsthand about how somebody was when they came in and then what kind of person they were when they left.
I think we've both seen that so many times, and it really is what keeps us going. Working with people in addiction is tough, but those success stories, and there are lots of them, really keep us going. We've had women come to us who had been addicted, whose first drug use was before they were even teenagers. So they have long-term, deep-seated addiction and almost always trauma. And so what our program allows them to do is kind of unpack that trauma, work through it, because it is a 12-month program. It takes a minute to work through a lot of that and or even begin to work through it. So we've seen people come to us with who have been incarcerated multiple times with addiction, who have lost pretty much everything you can lose, your family, your home, and come and watch them work their way back and find hope and leave with a job where they've gotten a promotion, leave where they're really working their steps and are at the point where they're ready to give back to women who are in the program, who are just starting the program, to mentor, coach, or sponsor them. And it's amazing to see. And it's really like the experience of knowing two different women. If you met someone when they come in versus the day they leave and graduate.
And we have a lot of before and after pictures where one is the mugshot when they're incarcerated, and one is the new woman that comes out a year later like a butterfly.
I bet they look totally different.
Totally different.
What types of trauma do a lot of these women have in their background, and is there maybe a common theme to that trauma?
Addiction in their family, which poverty, sexual abuse, emotional, verbal abuse, domestic violence, a lot of childhood trauma. which is really where it all begins. It's called ACEs, Adverse Childhood Experiences. And there's a way to gauge that through an assessment about what someone's ACEs score is. And our women's ACEs scores are pretty high.
And when you say high, what kind of base are you looking at? Like 1 to 10 being the highest?
Right. That's right. Exactly. And so, and I believe Taylor, who's our mental health counselor, shared with you last time that they're around 4s and 5s on average and some much higher. But with ACEs comes an increase. The outcomes for someone's life are really gravely affected based on how high their ACEs score is. It's predictive of death. It's predictive of lots of mental health issues, of incarceration, homelessness, being part of any number of systems as they get older. So if we can stop that cycle, that's our goal.
And then from what I've read about trauma, different types of trauma, I guess if it's childhood trauma, the brain almost stops in its tracks with development at that age. If it's 10 years old, then there's a certain part of the brain that doesn't really go past that. So that's really hard to cope with.
That's correct.
That's exactly right. And so we're doing a lot of remedial work and going back and meeting women where they are to help move forward.
A lot of them may have been making, I guess, decisions throughout their life that would be that decisions of a 10-year-old almost.
Exactly. Wherever they started using and becoming addicted and had their trauma, that's where we meet them.
What was surprising is that you talked about how a lot of these people who come through the program, their addiction started before their teenage years.
Often.
So they pick that up, obviously, from somebody in the household.
Yes.
Often. And often it's self-medication. It's a way to check out. It's a way to get out of pain from the trauma, from their environments. And oftentimes things that we see in our environment, you know, you see other people in your environment using, that's a natural choice. It feels like your option.
And I'm guessing a lot of times the person who may have either allowed the trauma to happen or who caused the trauma could be a mom or a dad.
Right. Who's in the same cycle themselves.
Is there a point where they come back in contact with that parent through the program and they figure out ways of maybe forgiveness or moving on?
Yeah, the 12 steps of recovery have a lot to do with that. And that's very individual. And it's not something we would ever require, but that's very healing. And that's definitely part of the 12-step program.
That being said, you're not only changing the lives of those who participate in the actual program, but those on the outskirts of it too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Changing whole systems.
And what have you seen there? What types of, I guess, new stories have you seen created?
I've seen kids be proud of their moms, sometimes for the first time, and nothing can bring a mom to her knees like that. Like to see that and the pride they feel is so inspiring.
I remember one client who brought her young daughter, who was 5 or 6 at the time, I expect, into the office, and she ran to Maridel and threw her arms around her, this little girl, and said, "Thank you for saving my mommy's life."
Oh, wow.
You can't beat that.
That's right.
The women who do go through the program, do they come from the Tennessee State Prison? Do they come from the local jail? Where do they come from?
Well, we work in the Rutherford County Jail and Work Center with women on pre-release. So women who are there and about to get released to help them plan to do a little case management. And we work in tandem with Recovery Court Reentry Program. And we really work with them to prepare them and to help them find a great place to go that's going to fit their needs. A lot of our women come from Rutherford County and the Rutherford County Jail and Work Center, but we also take women from all across the state and from any number of prisons and jails and work with public defenders and attorneys and the drug courts in those counties. Some women are furloughed to us, so they get to complete their sentence, the last year of their sentence with us, which is a really proactive, great thing that judges are catching on to. And get a step ahead.
I didn't even know that was possible.
Yeah, absolutely. We're a TDOC approved, Tennessee Department of Corrections approved facility. So women can come to us and serve the last year of their sentence with us.
What are some of the various charges that those who were in jail faced or maybe were convicted of?
You know, I don't always know their specific charges. That's something our treatment team knows, but they're very almost inevitably drug related and addiction related. So they'll come to us for a DUI. Maybe they've had several DUIs, petty theft, you know, things like that. We don't typically accept women with a violent history or violent charges. We keep a really therapeutic environment. And that's part of how we do that.
How would you answer the question if somebody asked you, is the biggest problem addiction or is the biggest problem finding the mental health treatment that's needed to help with mental health issues?
Right. So they're both super important, and it matters when in the course of that addiction you want to address it, right? The sooner the better. So if someone who comes to us, if their parents had had treatment, had had intervention, had had services to help them, or their parents, I mean, you could go back and back and back, right? Where does childhood trauma begin? So they're both very, very important.
And that childhood trauma literally could be multiple things, could be 10, 20 different things, from divorce of a parent in the beginning to child abuse, be it, you know, neglect or physical abuse or sexual abuse.
Or foster care. Foster care is a trauma in itself. Even though it's necessary at times, it's a trauma. It adds to someone's traumatic load.
Do you have a lot of people who come there who have been through the foster care system?
I don't know the data on that, and I'm not sure if we gather it, but that would be a really great thing to gather.
Gosh, I mean, when you look at foster care as a whole, first of all, there's not enough families out there to take in foster children. There's not enough good families, for sure, to take right. in foster care children. So that's a major problem probably that every state faces.
It is. And it's also a problem. Something that people are becoming aware of now is that so many dollars are spent on foster care and housing children outside their homes. And we're all starting to wonder, like, wow, if we took those resources and gave them to that family who's struggling, who's losing their kids to foster care earlier, what kind of difference could that make? We know kids do better at home. We know that.
How often do you see somebody's visitation day, a lunch day where other outside family members can come in? But how often do you see where a mom, a dad, a sister, brother come in to see that loved one and you're just kind of taken aback? You're surprised at how well put together this person may be, but yet, you know, looking at the whole picture, that there's a lot of disruption, a lot of problems, a lot of trauma in that family.
Absolutely, all the time. And I think that would probably go for most people. I think addiction is very prevalent. If anyone tells me, well, I've really been unaffected by addiction, I'm like, you're not paying attention. Not true.
And I guess everybody puts on kind of like that game face, you know,
sure.
when we go out in public.
That's right.
Everything's
That's
great.
Right.
Everything's great.
Exactly.
That's right.
Yeah, you take
They're
one look.
Normal.
Yeah, you take a look at social media and you think everybody's living this perfect life for the most part.
Exactly.
But how do you get deeper into what's really going on when somebody new comes in?
Well, we take our time and we really work hard to meet women where they are. Right. You talked about developmentally, what is their capacity? Where are they? So we want to assess that. We do lots of assessments. Taylor Mora is our mental health counselor, our full-time mental health counselor. Jessica Mayo Schwab is also a mental health counselor. And Shayla Robinson is our clinical program director. And they work clinically with the women as they come in to assess them and to advise the treatment team about where to meet them.
And again, we're talking about Doors of Hope this morning. Give us the rundown of what your normal is as far as what you typically see when you have that new person come in through those doors and they tell you, my background is this. And it may start with drugs, may start with alcohol, but how does all that work and what do you see?
The first thing we see when they first present to us is gratitude, because they're, it's called in the field a lot of times rock bottom, like they've been through a lot of things and they've had a great deal of loss and grief. And they're very grateful to start in a fresh place with caring people. But we see women literally who have lost everything. They may have very early experiences with trauma, like we talked about, with different kinds of abuse, including being in foster care, living with people who aren't their family, really early drug use, a lot of poverty, although that's not always the case. And addiction doesn't discriminate based on socioeconomic class. So that's not a given.
Education level. The education level of most of those who do participate in the program? Is it a graduate of high school?
It's typically high school, not always. And then we have other people who are professionals. You know, we have people who have been trainers for flight attendants. We have people who are registered nurses. So it's not always people who, it's not always women who haven't achieved things in their career.
Do you ever run across those stories where they may have given birth right before they went in to Yes. prison, and then maybe for the first time they're seeing a full-grown 15-year-old, even older?
Yes, and watching them, we had a graduate last year whose son had been adopted by someone else because she wasn't able to take care of him. But through the program and through her work in the program, she reached out to the adoptive dad who saw the beauty of allowing their shared son to know his mom. And it was really her reason for everything. And she had such gratitude to be able to be part of his life. And I think it healed something with him as well.
Really, her fill in the blank, addiction or life of crime, whatever it was, is what separated her from her own child in the very beginning.
Absolutely. And that's, it has a tendency to do that.
How do you go about rebuilding that life? Because it would, at least to me, it would feel like I've lost everything if you lose your kids at that early of a stage.
Yeah, you do. And that's a lot of grief to deal with. That's a lot of grief to unpack. So you can't just jump from here to the end of the story. And for every woman, it's different. And oftentimes you don't get to go back. You don't go back to how you wished it was going to be or how it was initially, but you create something new, a new relationship with your children.
Do you see people who come back to you and say, I want to help out in some capacity, or even I went back to school in order to become a counselor?
All the time. And one of the things I'm really proud of, and I think is very important at Doors of Hope, is that we have people who are in recovery, whether they came through our program or another program, who are integral parts of every aspect of our agency, including on our board of directors and including employees. We also, we work specific team members are certified peer recovery specialists, and that's CPRS, and those people are in recovery. They've been there, and that's a really powerful tool for people in recovery, is to have a peer who can walk beside them and who's been there.
You often hear stories from the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation, and they're talking about human sex trafficking. Is that a big problem where you sit? And are you seeing some people who have been a part of that world?
We do see women who have been trafficked. One of the interesting things about that is it's not always easy to know, because typically women who have been trafficked are not aware. They don't have the words for that. They're not educated about what that means. And so it's a walk. It's a process. And oftentimes women who have had that experience aren't able to articulate it for some time as they put the pieces together about what happened.
Do you sometimes see cases where there's not counselors, there's not psychologists available for the level of trauma that some of these women have experienced?
Absolutely, yes. For sure, we are really bereft of some mental health services in our state, frankly. It's very hard to come by. And that would go for, I mean, it's universal to every population. If you want mental health care, typically it will be people, even providers who are taking new patients, it's typically private pay. And that's like $150, $180, $200 an hour that, of course, most Tennesseans don't have to pay.
Things like bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, are those are at least common in your world of those you help?
Yes. Schizophrenia is not common in any population in general, but we do have people who have exhibited symptoms, some psychosis. It's not common. It's not, but the preponderance, most of our women do have some co-occurring disorder. So the ones we see most often are anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress disorder. Those are very, very common.
I could imagine anxiety and depression would be extremely high, especially after they just got out of a prison system or a jail.
Absolutely. Another trauma, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess that jail, that prison, those are traumas in itself.
Absolutely.
Do you provide or help link that person to the proper medication when needed?
Yes, we are a one-stop shop, and it's really something that we feel is important and we pride ourselves on. We partner, for example, we partner with Volunteer Behavioral Health. They have a new facility here in Murfreesboro. They're a nonprofit and a sister agency, although much larger, but we partner with them. They have a crisis support unit available for women or anyone. They have a detox. And so we actually are working to flesh out a whole continuum for the women we serve so that once you come to Doors of Hope, you're with us. We're going to walk beside you, including once you graduate. We're working on fleshing out a really great alumni program, which we've already started to house alumni, because what happens is they come to us, they're successful, they graduate after a year, they have a job. All our women work full time after the first 30 to 45 days. And so they have a job that we've worked to help them obtain. They've usually gotten promotions. They're feeling successful, but it's hard to afford to live here and in many places now. And so we really work to do some subsidized like subletting and continue some wraparound services for women even once they leave, with the plan that they'll come back and they'll nurture our current clients and walk beside them.
You know, when you think about jail, when you think about prison, you would think or imagine that, you know, that there's not drug use going on in those systems. But from what you hear in the news, there is drug use sometimes in those systems. So that said, do some of those who come to you, do they come to you with an active addiction going on?
Yes. Sometimes that happens. And we can't take them if they can't give us a negative drug screen. They're not ready for our services. But if as long as they're not on furlough, we can refer them for detox if they're ready, if they're really ready to address their issue.
And then housing through Doors of Hope. What does that look like for those who are involved in the program?
So we have a 6-bed recovery center where women come initially. They're there for 30 to 45 days. They attend classes every day. They attend AA or NA meetings every night. And once they do the work to graduate from that stabilization phase, they move on to one of our houses. We own a beautiful, huge blue Victorian house on Bell Street. We rent several properties, and they'll move to one of those houses living with other women. They will begin, once they're full-time employed, they'll begin to pay rent. A modest amount. It's an offering toward offsetting the cost for serving them.
And so while in that program, are they also doing drug testing and everything?
Always, yes. And absolutely.
How often does that happen?
It happens randomly, and they should expect it any time, and they know that.
And again, this morning, we're talking about Doors of Hope. We have with us today the executive director, Lois Barrett-Luke, and also Marcy Richmond. And Marcy, again, you're on the board there.
That's correct. That's correct.
And we'll talk even more about all of this in just a second. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back. If you have any questions, feel free to text those in this morning. Our phone number is 615-893-1450. Again, talking about Doors of Hope.
This is WGNS Action Line.
Broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios, MTE Sharing Change has now donated more than $11 million to local nonprofits assisting worthy causes in our community. MTE, serving to make life better since 1936.
Hi, Murfreesboro. Do you need something for your pet? If so, swing by Animal City on Broad Street. We have it all. From premium pet food, fun toys, grooming supplies, and more. You name it, we probably have it. Whether you've got a playful pup, a curious cat, or even a fish that needs a little TLC, we're here to help. Our friendly team can answer your questions and point you in the right direction. Stop by Animal City at 919 Northwest Broad Street today, because happy pets make happy homes.
Get old. Old National Bank, that is. Old National Bank has the experience and service you need to buy a home, make investments, even online and mobile banking. Old National Bank is in the borough on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard.
Old National Bank at 2230 Dr. MLK Jr. Boulevard, which used to be Mercury Boulevard.
Visit us and enjoy warm, homemade cookies at Old National Bank.
Old National Bank, equal housing lender, member FDIC.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
This is the WGNS Action Line.
Now, your host, Scott Walker.
Again, with us this morning from Doors of Hope, we have Lois Barrett-Lute, the executive director, and also Marcy Richmond, who is on the board at Doors of Hope. Going back to kind of explaining everything that happens through Doors of Hope, it is a program that it lasts for 12 months, right, for those who are involved. And the women who are in this program, once more, kind of tell us their background.
So it's women coming typically from incarceration, women with addiction who are ready to get engaged with recovery and turn their lives around and find some hope, typically with co-occurring disorders of anxiety, depression, or PTSD, very often rich histories of trauma.
In society as a whole, we saw an increase of those who have anxiety, especially during COVID. Really, over the last 5 years, we've seen a lot of increases in those who have anxiety. Are you seeing an increase there as well?
I don't know if I can speak to this demographic over a span of time. I've been at Doors of Hope for a year, but I can tell you that anxiety is very prevalent as a diagnosis for the women we serve.
And so they're learning how to cope with that in a positive way, obviously.
Yes.
But they're learning how to cope with that while also learning about their own addiction and how to figure out ways to navigate through that.
That's right. And learning about themselves for the first time sometimes.
And I bet a lot of times they may have a hidden talent they never knew they had, but they're, I guess, trying to figure out those too.
Absolutely. There's some wonderful, wonderful women who inspire me, who are our clients.
And we offer a couple of sort of extracurricular activities, if you will, in yoga class and some art classes.
Yoga, music, art.
Bring those other experiences in life to their attention.
Do you see some who go through the program and later become almost a motivational speaker for others who encourages?
Yeah, and write books about it. Mm-hmm. And Rhonda Rush is one.
Who heads the recovery ministry at a local church.
Oh, wow.
An incredible story.
She went on to become an author and run a program herself through a
church. Absolutely.
I'm guessing that's not what you typically see out of somebody.
No, but she has just shot up like a rocket, I guess. You know, she's.
And there are some very inspiring stories of things you would never guess on day one that were possible. It's really awesome.
Death. They lost their mother. They lost their father or sister. But you hear that often.
Often. Yes. And very often they lost them to addiction. Very, very often they lost them to overdose. And even as women are in our program, we have women who have lost family members to overdose since they've been there recently. A number of them.
What funds Doors of Hope? How do you go about having enough money to run this operation?
Let me give a huge shout out to Rutherford Opioid Board. They're the folks who handle the opioid settlement monies for Rutherford County, and they've been generous. They're a great group of people who really do give us some money on a reimbursement basis for some of our expenses, and about to submit that grant again this year. We have an amazing group of churches and individuals in our community who we're so very grateful. We have great support in our community. Having said that, we got a cut from our federal. We had a little bit of money through our state. There was a federal pass-through that we lost. We heard that we lost last Thursday. We don't have any other federal grants per se at the time. But it's tough. It's really tough to fund a nonprofit in this climate. It's tough on a good day, and it's tough under any administration, but it's really challenging right now.
Is it expensive to operate?
We work hard to keep overhead low. We're very fiscally conservative with the money that is donated to us. We work hard to be good stewards. Having said that, it's really important from the value of integrity that we pay our people a going rate so we get good people to show up and help our women. And so it's always a balancing act.
Is there a number, for example, if somebody listening, if they wanted to help, let's say, pay for somebody to go through the program or to give a gift that would pay for that one person, two people, how much does that usually cost?
We figured out, and I didn't bring that sheet with me, but we figured out recently, this did not include housing, but food and medicine and clothing and dental and the day-to-day needs that we all incur, to help one person for a year can be as much as $5,000. Now, you can certainly break that down and say, I'd like to pay someone's expenses for 6 months or 3 months, sure, or whatever. But we have certainly a phone number and also a website that folks can go to. Our phone number is 615-203-5221. And they can also go to opendoorsofhope.org and go to the donations section on the website.
Now, there is also a fundraising golf tournament that's coming up in May.
May 22nd is what we call the Fairway to Hope, and it will be played at the Pine Creek Golf Course up in Mount Juliet. We have two flights, a morning flight that begins at 7:30, and the afternoon begins at 1 o'clock. Lunch will be served in the middle of that. Registration for the morning flight will take place at 7 a.m., but golfers like that golf course, so some are willing to get up and be there at 7 a.m., and it's not that far away.
For those who are curious more about Doors of Hope, or if they would like somebody to come to their group and speak about Doors of Hope, is that possible?
Absolutely, and I love that. You can call me at the number Marcy mentioned, 615-203-5221. My extension is 107. Always happy to do that, or come out with my team and do that. Or you can go to our website, opendoorsofhope.org, and there's lots of information there, and I'm going to invite you to mess around, definitely go over and check out our golf tournament. But there's a lot of information and statistics about what we do.
And again, Doors of Hope is a nonprofit, if anybody is curious about that. Yes. And the program, it allows for women who are recently incarcerated to actually go through the program and then find a new way of living.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
One of the quotes that I'll never forget from one of our counselors in the early days was about the gals who finished the program and their next steps. And he said, you have to change their playground and change their playmates.
Yeah.
And that's a fundamental part of their successful recovery.
Absolutely. It's hard to get better in a place where you got sick.
Yeah.
Do you find some people who don't make it, who don't graduate through the program, maybe because of addiction?
Yes, that's the nature of addiction, and it's something we have to be pretty hip to. We would be very Pollyanna-ish if we thought everyone who came would finish that time, but we don't give up, and we are going to hold their hand and walk them through them when they're ready, and we're going to do everything we can to get them reengaged in recovery as they're ready to do that.
And we've had some wash out from the program, and 2, 3, 5 years later, they're back, and they complete it successfully, yeah, just where they are in that moment.
And when they do come back to go through the program a second time, is it because they went to jail again? They went to prison?
Sometimes
again?
It is. Sometimes, you know, there's a saying in the field about rock bottom. You have to be at rock bottom, which means pretty much that you've lost everything to be ready for recovery. And sometimes they just weren't there the first time. And again, relapse is part of the disease of addiction.
What are some of the stories you hear about what people have lost? In addition to lost custody of their children, what else do you hear?
Their car, their homes, their spouse, relationships with their entire family, their support system, obviously their jobs.
Certainly their self-respect.
Their dignity.
Their
hope.
Mm-hmm.
Their hope supremely above all. They've lost hope.
I would imagine that relationships are very hard to keep for a lot of people who are going through the program, or prior to going through the program, relationships were very hard for them to keep.
Absolutely. And that's one of the beauties of having a 12-month program, is that women begin to trust one another and form bonds and relationships within the program that seem to be, you know, to last a lifetime. We're currently working to recruit volunteers in our community, women who would like to come and mentor, be a connection with women in our program. And our goal is to have each of our clients have a volunteer mentor within the next month.
Is it very easy to kind of lose sight of what your goal is while in the program? Or how do you go about reminding each person every day, you know, this is what you're here for?
It is very apparent, and they keep us because the program is so rigorous. Because, you know, when they come in, they're either doing classes all day and then going to meetings, or then once they get a job, they're working at their job all day, coming home, grabbing a meal, having a little fellowship, and going to a meeting. I mean, it is pervasive. Our program is pretty structured. And we found that women, especially when they first come, really appreciate and need that that level of structure.
Being busy, that's important as well.
Yeah, exactly. There's not a whole lot of downtime.
And how do they get to and from work once they find that job through the program?
That's one of the things Rutherford Opioid Board helps us with is transportation. So we will transport them. We'll help them get an Uber or a Lyft. And what our preference is really, because it's a life skill that will last them beyond our program, is that they cultivate a network of people who they can call on, is building their own new community in recovery, a supportive community.
And again, we've been talking about Doors of Hope this morning. A special fundraiser golf tournament is coming up in May. And to learn more about that or Doors of Hope in general, where do they go?
opendoorsofhope.org. You'll see a banner right at the top on the homepage about the golf tournament, or you can click on the events button and you can read all about it and find out how you can get involved. We're always looking for businesses to sponsor that event. We give them a great shout out in a four-man team to play, or a woman team to play, and give them lots of love in social media and signage also at the event. And we have different levels of sponsorship. We kind of have something for everyone.
Sounds great. Well, again, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us here, Scott.
Again, with us today, Lois Barrett Luke, and she is the executive director of Doors of Hope, and then Marcy Richmond, who is on the board of Doors of Hope.
We break in with traffic, news, and weather bulletins anytime. Good Neighbor Talk is your 24/7 connection. WTNS, AM, FM, and online.
Hi, this is Peter Demas. Join our family at Demas's Restaurant. So many people buy so many different things. You know, I go out to eat and I like eating steak, where my wife will end up getting her salmon. Our salmon is cut fresh, so she loves her salmon. It's one of those places that you can go, you can get pastas or chicken. You know, the kids love it. Get what you want at Demas's Restaurant and not be limited just to one or two items. Join our family at Demas's Restaurant, 1115 Northwest Broad Street in Murfreesboro.
I am Charlotte Gardner. I've lived at Adams Place for 3 years. After my husband died, I didn't want to cook for one anymore. Everything just got too tedious.
How long did you look around?
I did not look around. I did not even consider any place else.
Hi, this is Terry Deal at Adams Place. Call me for more information about Adams Place. Phone 615-904-9111.
Adams Place on Memorial, across from Walmart.